Professor, if containing such a field is virtually impossible, like, as I think you put it, trying to grab a balloon and then watching it bulge out here and there and everywhere as you grab it, what do you imagine that might contain such a process? Would it be magnetic, giant electromagnetic fields, or what?
Well, that's our best bet to create what is called a magnetic bottle. You take a donut, and put coils of wire around the donut, okay? So you have basically a coil of wire wound in the shape of a donut. You put the gas inside the donut, and you turn on the magnetic field, and the magnetic field contains the plasma, that super hot gas inside, and then you send a spark inside to heat it up. And so far, they've been able to hit tens of millions of degrees centigrade with devices like this.
For what period of time?
Well, less than a second. You have to do what is called attain Lawson's criterion. Lawson's criterion is attained in the center of stars. It's also attained in hydrogen warheads. And we're not quite there yet with Lawson's criterion in a fusion reactor. We're about one-tenth of Lawson's criterion. You need to contain the gas for about one full second. So far, we can do it for a fraction of a second before the plasma disintegrates. Because, you know, you're squeezing this balloon. Every time you squeeze the gas at one point, it bulges out someplace else. The gas is unstable. That's the reason why we still rely upon oil and coal. Because magnets have a dipole charge, plus and minus, I mean, north and south. And it's quite difficult. It's quite difficult to squeeze gas using dipoles, and the best we can do is use donuts to squeeze the gas. But the French, as I mentioned, and the European Union and the United States and Japan and Korea are investing hundreds of millions of dollars on the ITER, the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor, to be based in southern France. And it has the best hope of attaining fusion perhaps by 2030. And if that takes place, then commercialization will take place around 2040.
Well, a couple of questions. You suggest if it can go for a second, it can then keep going. So is that a process that once it's going for a second or so will then be self-sustaining?
Well, once we hit a full second, you will then attain Lawson's criterion. It'll be generating lots of heat. That heat then in turn can be channeled to keep the magnetic field going. So it's self-perpetuating. It creates heat. The heat is then used to make electricity, which then is used to create the magnetic field, which in turn is used to squeeze the gas. And that's why each cycle you get more energy coming out. And that's why this is called hot fusion. We think that hot fusion may in fact be attained within a few decades. Now, of course, there's also cold fusion. There's some people who still hold out for it, but we have yet to have any reliable source of energy from cold fusion, fusion in a glass of water. So most physicists would say hot fusion is the way to go.
All right. Okay, well, I'm still working on hot fusion in my mind. Now, let's say we get it going for a second, and it becomes self-sustaining.
Sustaining, right.
It's a kind of thing that ratchets up.
Right.
Right. You said reaction equals heat equals more electricity for the magnetic field to hold it in.
Right.
How do we know that it just doesn't simply ratchet up past the hardware's ability to keep it contained?
Oh, okay. What happened is if it spins out of control, unlike a fission reactor like Three Mile Island or Chernobyl.
Right.
Once it starts to melt itself and devour itself, like in a science fiction movie.
Right.
Then Lawson's criterion is no longer satisfied, and the thing turns itself off.
So it doesn't kaboom.
Doesn't kaboom, right.
It doesn't release enormous amounts of dirty stuff.
A fission reactor has nuclear waste inside, tremendous amounts of nuclear waste. So about 30 tons of nuclear waste inside a typical fission reactor.
Yes.
A fusion reactor has basically just hydrogen gas. And so you're not talking about hardly any waste products at all, except the steel. But, you know, after 30 years, you have to decommission the steel. There's no nuclear waste like what you find in a meltdown. If you have a Class 9 meltdown, which is the maximum scenario for a fission reactor, you could wipe out the state of Pennsylvania.
Oh, sure.
50,000 square miles, you can pretty easily wipe out if you loft 30 tons of nuclear waste into the atmosphere in a typical fission reactor. And these are just average numbers I'm giving you. You can wipe out a huge amount of real estate. If Indian Point, north of where I'm standing, if Indian Point, north of New York City, were to have been hit by the terrorists, mm-hmm. and the terrorists at 9/11 thought about targeting Indian Point, they even have said so in a video, if they had hit Indian Point, I wouldn't be here right now. This whole Manhattan would be radioactive. They would have to have evacuated all of, you know, the Northeast Corridor if they had hit Indian Point and released 30 tons of high-level nuclear waste into the atmosphere.
Do you think that if one of those airplanes had indeed been targeted on Indian Point, that it would have breached the containment?
Ah, that's a $64,000 question. If you take a look at the original design specifications for design basis accident at a mm-hmm. nuclear power plant, mm-hmm. They said that only a small 707 jet plane, it would have to withstand an attack from a 707 without jet fuel, okay? Mm-hmm. And this, of course, was back in the 70s when these estimates were done. Now, nobody flies 707s. And everybody knows that they're fully laden with fuel, especially on takeoff, and that's an enormous amount of fuselage and engine parts and metal with a tremendous amount of fuel plowing into a building. And I really doubt that the Indian Point nuclear power plant containment would have handled anything close to a 747, let's say jumbo jet, fuelly laden. It would have breached the containment. And it would have caused an evacuation of the plant.
Then why, Professor, do you think they did not do it?
If you listen to the videotape very carefully, okay, they simply say they scouted out targets in the Northeast. They seriously considered looking at, quote, nuclear installations, according to one translation that I've seen. They didn't say Indian Point specifically, but, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. Indian Point is the only large nuclear installation in this area. Mm-hmm. And they don't say in the tape why they went for World Trade Center. I suspect that it was an easier target. Indian Point is a very small reactor from, you know, from 5 miles up, while the World Trade Center is visible from 5 miles up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think probably logistically it was easier for these pilots to zero in on the World Trade Center rather than Indian Point.
Okay, so for these reasons then and others, including waste, storage they want to put very close to me out here, I take it that you do not support continued or renewed building of fission plants.
Well, to make a dent in global warming, you would have to increase the number of fission plants by a factor of 10. Now, we have about 100 right now. Can you imagine 1,000 nuclear power plants? That would make very inviting targets for terrorists, given the fact that security at nuclear power plants is not the best. There have been a number of scandals involving security at nuclear power plants. One nuclear power plant was found to have actually given the answers to the workers for a test that the workers were supposed to have passed. The NRC once put a gun encased it in plastic and put it in a suitcase so that no one could fire the gun, and to see how far they could go into a nuclear power plant. They went all the way into the control room with a gun sealed in plastic in a suitcase.
Yeah.
So I don't trust the security that we have at nuclear power plants, especially if a 747 jumbo jet is coming at you from 5 miles up. There's really not much a nuclear power plant can do. It's a sitting duck, basically. And we would have 1,000 of them.